This week on the show, the Fire Feral talk begins. Are the Red Sox in a free fall? Matt McCarthy of 98.5 The Sports Hub weighs in. Plus, we recap the incredible, improbable Celtics win from Sunday night and answer the question, do we have a series in the Eastern Conference Finals? All that and more coming up. Calling It starts right now. And welcome into Calling It, another week, another episode. I am Alex Barth, coming to you from our studios in Wesley, Massachusetts. Well, this week was supposed to be Fire Feral week. We were going to jump on the Red Sox for what they've been doing under the Celtics' nose. The Celtics won last night and kind of took the sails out of that, but we are going to start with some Red Sox talk. Joining us on the phone from 98.5 The Sports Hub is Matt McCarthy. Matt, how's it going?
Well, I'll tell you what, Alex. We can start Fire Feral week on Friday now, because the Celtics are going to get absolutely rolled in the next two games. As great as last night was, and it was awesome, we can just officially have a 2 or 3 day delay on the Fire Feral talk that I'm sure is coming up immediately after the Celtics get eliminated by the Cavs.
Let me ask you this. Let's kind of play these two things off each other here. Because the Celtics have gone on this run and they've been so captivating, have the Red Sox, based on the way they've been playing, maybe gotten a pass on the lack of attention they've gotten in the last couple of weeks?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, you know, this Red Sox team has been pretty mediocre all year. I know they won yesterday to salvage the series out in Oakland, but you can't drop 3 out of 4 to that Oakland A's team. You know, they haven't hit the way that they're supposed to. You know, their bullpen's probably been better than I think we all thought it was going to be, but they haven't gotten the performance out of most of the starting rotation outside of Sale and Rodriguez. Porcello's been a disappointment. Pomeranz, I mean, man, that guy just doesn't seem to care. I don't know what his deal is. And, you know, the fifth starter has been a complete black hole, the same as third base. So, yes, you know, this team was, you know, won the division last year, and you're thinking that they're going to be, you know, right in it all season long, and they're, what, third, fourth place in the American League East? That's not good enough. So, yes, the Celtics going on this nice little run has certainly taken away from a lot of the criticism and a lot of the attention that the mediocre Boston Red Sox deserve, and we are going to start to really get to that here. You know, once we turn the calendar to June and there's nothing else going on, all eyes are going to be on the Red Sox, and the way they're playing right now, that might not be a good thing for them.
Well, it seems with the Red Sox, there's no middle ground. They'll either come out and win 12-3, or whatever it was yesterday. They'll put up these astronomical numbers, or they just won't be able to hit, and they'll lose like 4-0. Why is this team so polar and or so bipolar? What is it that makes them go like that, and is there a way to kind of change that? It seems like it'd be something that'd be easy to change.
They're a bad situational baseball team, and even last year, they were not good situationally. Remember that there was that crazy stat last year, Alex, that the Red Sox, you know, had this historically good offense. They were the best in baseball, yet they were dead last in hitting with the bases loaded.
Oh, my God, yes. That was miserable. I do remember that.
So, again, that point, and I was harping on this all last year. I said this team turns a 4-1 game into 15-2 games. You know, that's how they would win. They get out in front, all of a sudden the pressure's off them offensively, and they pile it on. But when it's a 3-2 ball game, all of a sudden they can't hit. Or their runner's in scoring position, bases loaded situationally. Runner, you know, they hit a leadoff double. They don't move the runner over. They're not good situationally. And I think going down the list, you see a lot of guys who aren't that great situationally. Jackie Bradley Jr., not a great situational hitter. You could argue maybe not a great hitter, just overall in general. But it just seems to go down the list that when this Red Sox team gets put into situational baseball, kind of tight, close, low-scoring games, they can't perform. And that reared its ugly head in the playoffs. Everybody was commenting, well, you know, they hit all year. Why didn't they hit in the playoffs against the likes of Trevor Bauer, Josh Tomlin? That's because when the pressure is on this Red Sox offense, they don't perform. Last year, I thought they totally overachieved offensively because, as I said, if they got out to a lead, 4-1, 5-2, all of a sudden it would turn into a 12-2 ball game, 15-2 ball game. It's easy for them when they're out in front. They're just a front-running team. I don't know what it is, you know, about that group, but they just seem to be so front-running offensively, and they haven't gotten out in front a lot this year, and that's why I think you've seen the offense struggle so much. essentially the same unit with the exception of David Ortiz from last year.
And that's a big, wrong, that is a big exception, though.
Of course it is. Of course it is. But you know, is that, does the loss of David Ortiz, you know, take you from the top offense in baseball to a bottom 10 offense in baseball? It should make a huge difference, don't get me wrong, but it shouldn't make that huge of a difference. And that's because Ortiz was one of the few guys who could hit situationally, and they just don't seem to have many of those guys. So I think it's a real problem that they're going to have to figure out moving forward, because if you're going to see this trend continue again this year, the same way that it continued last year, they just can't hit situationally, you got to reevaluate some of these players. I'm sorry, because in baseball, and when it counts the most, you need to be able to do situational little things, and this team doesn't do that well.
Again, we're talking with Matt McCarthy of 98.5, the Sports Hub. So, Matt, it goes back to our main point this week. We heard in the offseason, Dave Dombrowski came out and said that John Farrell is not a great in-game manager. Dombrowski doesn't care about that. But clearly, the in-game is an issue. How much of the Red Sox' lack of situational ability is due to their manager's tendency to fall asleep at the wheel, to use your words?
I think it has something to do with it, although in defense of John Farrell, and I can't believe I'm about
God, on Fire Farrell Week, you're going to say in defense of John Farrell.
Hey, still fire the guy, and I'll give you my reasonings why. In defense of John Farrell this year, Alex, I actually think he's been a little bit better in-game than he's been in previous years, with a few notable exceptions. His mismanagement of Chris Sale in the Toronto game where he brought Craig Kimbrel out. Then the very next week, he brings Chris Sale out for the ninth when he's over 100 pitches. He's been inconsistent on the management of Sale, and he's had a couple of real blunders when it's come to going to the bullpen. But when you talk about managing the actual bullpen, I think Farrell has gotten the most out of this unit that he possibly can this year. Because go down the list, do you trust anybody except Craig Kimbrel? Their bullpen's been pretty good.
Isn't a lot of that just Kimbrel having an historic season, though?
Yes, it is, but Farrell has used it differently. Last year, Farrell refused to go to Kimbrel in the eighth inning for four-out, five-out saves, and you've seen him do that multiple times this year. And he's used Kimbrel as a weapon out of that pen. So you have to give him credit. He changed the book. Last year, he would not go to Kimbrel at all in the eighth inning. You know, that was the sense. You know, you don't, you know, Kimbrel's a three-out guy. He's realized this year my bullpen's weaker. I need to get the most out of my closer, so I'm going to use him aggressively. Going to him in the eighth inning in Minnesota on that final Sunday worked out very well. You know, Kimbrel got out of the jam. Red Sox put up 10 runs in the ninth, and you didn't need to go back to him. He's been willing to use Kimbrel differently this year, and I think he deserves credit for that. I think he deserves credit for the way he's managed the bullpen as a whole, because he has gotten most out of a unit that could not be this good. All right, there's my defense of John Farrell. Here's why you should fire him. They, as a unit, as a team, have not performed up to their expectations. So, who does that ultimately fall on? First, you can't fire the 25 players, so you have to fire the manager. It just doesn't seem like, as a team, they're responding to him. And, Dave Dombrowski argued in the offseason that, he's good in the clubhouse, he's good in the room, and that's more important than the in-game stuff. Well, it doesn't appear that that's working, because they're better than a 500 ball club. They are. And yet, Farrell isn't getting the most out of his team. He's getting the most out of his bullpen, the way he's managing it, but he's not getting the most out of this team. They're just not performing the way that they should be. There's this, and I'm looking for the word here, they're lacking that it factor, and they just don't seem to be responding to him. So I think that's why you get rid of him, not because of the in-game managing, because I think that's actually been slightly better this year. You have to get rid of him because they haven't responded.
Now let me ask you this. We've seen Dave Dombrowski make some, we'll call them fireworks moves, the last two off seasons, and he's left this team out high and dry. If they don't win with this group, it's going to be a while for them to be competitive again, based on what he's done to the farm system. When do we put Dombrowski on the hot seat?
You should start doing it right now, because they mismanaged the situation at third base so badly, and now they've got this black hole where Devin Marrero is your third baseman, and all of a sudden you're counting on Pablo the Hutt to come back and perform like a quality big league hitter. And I don't know if he's healthy, if he's a quality big league hitter. That's still a question. I cannot believe that they relied on Pablo Sandoval to come back and hold down third base and give them enough offense to help them, along with Mitch Moreland, try to replace some of the production that David Ortiz gave them. I'm sorry, that was just an unacceptable move. They need to stop trading for bullpen arms. Use your money, go out and sign a bullpen arm. Stop trading assets for bullpen arms. Carson Smith hasn't done anything. Tyler Thornburg hasn't done anything. Go down the list. Their track record of trading for bullpen arms is horrendous over the last 5 years, and it's not just Dave Dombrowski. It's going back to Ben Sherrington, Andrew Bailey, Joel Hanrahan. I once, you know, compiled a list of, you know, these 20 names that the Red Sox have traded for over the last 5 years at bullpen arms, and Craig Kimbrell is one of the two or three ones that's actually good. I mean, that was a good trade, don't get me wrong, but, I mean, was that a real, you know, that was a no-brainer. The guy's been one of the best closers in baseball for the last 5 years. I mean, it's not like, you know, that was exactly a hard decision. Stop trading for bullpen arms. Go out and sign somebody. Develop an arm, please, anything. And Dombrowski has, you're exactly right, Alex. He's left this team in a tough position because now all of a sudden you might have to go out and trade prospects for Mike Moustakas or, you know, Josh Harrison if he becomes available, because third base is such a black hole. If David Price isn't healthy, you're going to have to go out. You're absolutely going to have to go out and add a starter, because you can't keep trotting Kyle Kendrick and Hector Velazquez and Henry Owens and Brian Johnson out there at the back end of your rotation. You can't do that. Drew Pomeranz, I'm sure, won't stay healthy. So there are some real issues on this team, and it does put them in a tough situation, because you know what? If they're still a 500 team, you shouldn't invest in that. You shouldn't trade Devers and Dahlbeck and Jason Groom for, you know, rental pieces for a 500 team. It's a tough spot, but you're right. You know, they've kind of established this three-year window, and all of a sudden you're not winning in year one. That's a problem.
And you mentioned Price, and I want to get back to that, but real quick first, when Dombrowski signed in Boston, there was discussion of him. He has this reputation of being this great baseball general manager. He won one World Series with a team that wasn't really his 20 years ago, and since then he's gotten teams close, but when he leaves, the team is in shambles. Why does Dave Dombrowski have this reputation for being this great baseball mind when it seems like everywhere he goes, he's close but no cake?
I'll say this. Dombrowski's won wherever he's gone. And, you know, I mean, he won in Detroit. He didn't win a World Series, but the Tigers were, you know, one of the best teams in baseball. They fell short because they couldn't develop a bullpen. And that's been Dombrowski's bugaboo throughout his entire career. And, you know, it's one of the reasons why he didn't win in Detroit. But, I mean, he did help build that Marlins team. So I think you're kind of selling him short there. And, you know, he's been competitive everywhere he's gone. So, I mean, he's been a very successful general manager. I mean, you know, you can do far worse than Dave Dombrowski as your GM, but that doesn't mean he is above criticism. I mean, you know, this is a guy who traded Randy Johnson when he was with the Expos. But at the same time, he also traded for Miguel Cabrera. So, I mean, he's had his hits and misses, but for the most part, he's been pretty darn good. So, yeah. He's an upgrade over Ben Sherrington. I mean, there's no doubt about that. My only concern is he does have this tendency to sell the farm. And, you know, that's great if you're going to try and win in a 3 or 4 year window, but you better win in that 3 or 4 year window. And all of a sudden, year one's not going too well, and they've decimated the farm system. I mean, Devers and Dahlbeck, I mean, I love Bobby Dahlbeck. I've told you about that before. He's the next big guy. And Jason Groom are your next guys coming through. And at this point, I wouldn't trade them because you got to leave something in the system. So it puts him in a really tough spot. I think he deserves a lot of criticism for the way that this team has come out this year, because it is a flawed team. And, you know, you win the division last year and all of a sudden you're worse and you add Chris Sale. You know, you got to criticize the guy because there are too many holes on the roster. But we'll see. You know, we'll see if they bounce back. I mean, I'm not, you know, saying fire Dave Dombrowski yet. But no doubt he deserves some criticism, you know, for the way that this team has come out, for really how mediocre they've been. Definitely a large portion of that is on roster construction, and that's on Dombrowski.
Again, we're talking with Matt McCarthy of 98.5, the Sports Hub in Boston. Matt, two more quick things. First of all, David Price will make one more rehab start. His last one was a little rocky, although he said he felt great, which is, you know, more important, whatever. Are you expecting David Price back soon? What are you expecting from him when we see him?
I have no idea what to expect from him, because I have no idea what to expect from a guy that has an elbow injury. I'll tell you this, though. The Red Sox need him They need him badly. So the Red Sox better hope that elbow is fine, because if that elbow isn't fine and he isn't able to give them what he gave them last year throughout the rest of this season, they're screwed. Because they're not going to, you know, you don't want to go out and get some, you know, crappy rental starting pitcher. You don't want to go out and trade for Drew Pomeranz again, because that's what you're going to have to do if David Price doesn't come back. So I have no idea what he's going to be like, but every Red Sox fan should be praying to whatever god they worship that David Price comes back and is the guy that he is last year. And, you know, for all Red Sox fans who don't like the guy, and I'm one of them, get used to it, because you're going to need to see him on the mound. You need him more than anybody this year. So you better pray to God that David Price comes back and is healthy, because if he doesn't, they're not going to the playoffs. I'll tell you that right now. They need David Price to come back and be the guy. Otherwise, you will be sitting at home watching 8 other teams in October, and you won't be watching the Red Sox.
Big words, big strong words from Matt McCarthy right there. One more before we let you, and it's kind of scary too. You don't know what you're going to expect from your $200 million pitcher.
That seems really a little out there.
Put it all on the table here. John Farrell, does he last through the season? How long does he last if he doesn't?
Well, as I said, you know, right there, I mean, I think John Farrell's job rides on David Price's health, because if Price comes back, it is scary. I'd be pretty scared if I'm John Farrell. You know, listen, if they're still 500 or below 500 in July, you got to make a move. I'm sorry. You know, you can't, and you know, as we said, Dave Dombrowski deserves a lot of criticism for the way that this team has come out. But that being said, you're the manager of a team that won a division last year, and you've been on a hot seat many times before. You've led your team to what, 2 last place finishes. If they're still 500 or below in July and they're still just floundering, you got to make a move. You absolutely have to make a move, and you have to make a move before the Yankees or the Orioles pull away with this thing. This division, I don't think, is very good. The Yankees have been a surprise, but I don't buy their starting pitching. The Orioles kind of are who they are. They're always going to be competitive, but they're never going to be an elite team in this league. There's an opportunity. The Rays don't scare me. The Blue Jays don't scare me. This division is so winnable. There's an opportunity to go out and take it. And if they don't take it, you got to make a move. So, you know, and as I said, it all ties into whether David Price can come back and anchor down that final spot in the rotation. If he does, I think the Red Sox all of a sudden really start to turn it around. If he doesn't, if he's not healthy, or if he can't go out there and perform, then, you know, you're going to kind of see the team the way that they are. And I don't think Farrell survives if they continue down this path. I really don't.
Well, I'll say this. The Celtics season may be coming to an end soon. It's going to put some more attention on the Red Sox, but I'm sure Dombrowski and co. are just as happy as the Celtics that they won the lottery, because it's going to give them a little more time under the radar there.
Yeah, the Red Sox are certainly hoping that the Celtics find an absolute miracle and go to the NBA Finals.
Matt McCarthy of 98.5.
No bigger Celtics fans than the Red Sox right now.
Absolutely not. Matt McCarthy of 98.5, thanks for coming on, and we'll be talking to you throughout the season, and I'm sure we'll be exploring some alternate managers at some point.
At some point we will. I'll tell you what, here's my guy, Kevin Bowles down in Pawtucket. Players love playing for him. He's the guy.
Well, David Price will be playing for him this week, and all eyes should be there. Matt, thanks for coming on.
Anytime, Alex.
Colin, it is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call, the game within the game.
Welcome back into Calling It. Like I mentioned, we're going to touch on the Celtics. Here joining us now is our new intern in the office. It's his first day today. Intern Mitch. Mitch Breslaw slides across the table from me. Mitch, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. It's great to be here, Alex. Thanks for having me on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. We'll have you on a bit. People always like hearing from the interns. So you watched the Celtics game last night, and I think like many, you weren't expecting much, but they pulled it out. Celtics get the late win on the Avery Bradley three-pointer. Do we have a series here? Is it time to start talking about that?
Well, I was watching the game with my friends last night, and the whole entire game, even when it got close, I didn't think that the Celtics were going to be able to pull this game out, because the Cavs are just, I don't know, the Cleveland Cavaliers, they're just so good at all times throughout the game. But last night, it was a little bit different. The Celtics decided to show up. They were playing with more courage than they had been. They had more bravery, and they wanted to stand up to the Cavaliers. So Right, I didn't believe that the Celtics were going to win until the actual moment right. that they did win the game.
Well, I mean, you mentioned them playing with bravery there. And after the game, it seemed like, I know Al Horford said something about it. Jonas Jerebko, low-key hero, said something about it. That they played with heart, and that was the difference. And to me, like, great, you won a game, you played with heart. Where was this the first two games of the series? You're telling me you could have performed like this the first two games you didn't because you didn't have the heart to? When you had your emotional leader out there on the floor after not having him out there last night? What does that say about this team that it took them losing Isaiah Thomas to get going? And I know are the Celtics better off without Isaiah Thomas talk is going to start, but, you know, does heart just mean, is heart code for they were surprised they won? Or does heart mean that they could have been winning and they were sleepwalking? They were as scared as the Cavs as we all were.
Yeah, I think Isaiah Thomas has been playing this whole entire playoff run with a lot of heart. He showed the Celtics fans what he can do. He's had some amazing games, and he just keeps going at it no matter what challenges come in front of him. However, this Cavs series, it looked a little bit different to me. I feel like he's still playing with heart, and he still is trying to win the games. However, it doesn't look like he can really get anything going against the Cavs. I feel like the Celtics are scared to play against the Cavs.
No, it did look like he was trying, and obviously the injury hurt him, but it's announced that he's out for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. He doesn't play in Game 3, and then they start playing with heart after finding out that he's not going to be there. So is it that they're better without Isaiah Thomas, and heart is just some excuse for them saying they didn't try the first two games, or were they generally afraid or bored with the Cavaliers? We heard all year that this team was fearless, and they were ready to take on everybody. You know, I'm going to be disappointed if they come out somehow and win game four. I think you need to be looking at, well, what was wrong at home with their best player? Why did they get knocked around the first two games?
Isaiah Thomas, he didn't come out with the same mentality that he's come out through all the series. I guess maybe it could be LeBron himself facing off against him, sort of gives him some intimidation. I'm not really sure exactly what's going on through his mind. But the Celtics, I don't think they came out ready for the series. I'm not going to say it's just because they only had one day of rest. But I feel like since the Cavs had, I think, 9 days, I feel like they should have been caught off guard more from the Celtics, who had just played and they've been able to get practice in very quickly with that one, almost not even a one-day turnaround. But they were just surprised, I guess, and didn't come out with the courage that and the heart that they played with. But Isaiah Thomas, it just seems like he can't play against the Cavs. He's just forcing too much, going up for the just driving to the hoop and not being able to make it in for a layup. And I'm not really sure what it was, but somehow it was just against the Cavs, he couldn't do it.
Well, now that the Celtics don't have Isaiah for the rest of the series, you have to wonder, How is that changing them for the better? And it's been the discussion all year. Are the Celtics actually better off without Isaiah Thomas, given what he gives away defensively? But when he wasn't scoring, yeah, I think you could make the argument that with his hip injury, the Celtics are better off with Isaiah Thomas missing the rest of the playoffs with injury. But you mentioned LeBron, and I want to talk about that because he was not himself in Game 3. He was outscored by Kelly Olynyk, which, by the way, I predicted. A little shameless plug here. I said before the series that Kelly Olynyk would outscore LeBron James in one game this series. I also predicted Torrey Krug would outscore Sidney Crosby in the 2013 Eastern Conference Finals, but enough about my life accomplishments here. LeBron was garbage. LeBron was garbage. Scored 11 points. He was 1-for-8 from the field. He seemed unsure of what to do. And at the very end of the game, he was passing the ball. He was giving it to Kyrie. He was giving it to J.R. Smith. I think he gave it to Tristan Thompson once. And it got me thinking back to 2011, Game 7 at the Garden, Celtics Heat. And that was before, remember, that was before LeBron had won a title. And there was that narrative of LeBron wasn't clutch. And he didn't want the last shot. And he didn't have what it took to be a champion. He comes out, drops 45 on the Celtics, triple-double. We all remember perhaps the greatest night of his career. And that launched this new LeBron that could win and was confident and had charisma and could do well late in games. Well, now, fast forward to last night. And we all thought the old LeBron was dead and buried. He's passing the ball at the end of the game. He's complaining to reporters in the press conference that, oh, you only ask me questions when we lose. He's sulking on the bench. He's bossing teammates around. This looks like old school LeBron. And not old school LeBron Miami Heat LeBron, old school early Cavs getting his ass whooped up and down by the big three of the Celtics LeBron. And if that LeBron is back, and I'm not saying he is, it may have just been a momentary lapse for him. But he quit last night. He quit on Monday night. It is the first time I've seen him quit in a game in a long time. Certainly the first time since he went back to Cleveland. If that LeBron comes out on the floor in game four, the Cavs are in trouble. Because the Celtics can defend this team without Isaiah Thomas on the floor. And if, huge if the Cavs let game four get away, it's the Kevin Millar, don't let us win tonight. 2004 ALCS, don't let the Celtics win game four. Because if LeBron is already down on himself, loses game four, and has to go back to the Garden tied 2-2, look, maybe he'll turn it on, it'll be game seven, 2011 all over again. Maybe goes back down 2-2, tied at 2-2, says enough is enough and puts the stomp on it. But if he really is back to his old LeBron ways, it compounds. If he loses again, he's going to get more miserable and close up more and care even less. And if it goes 2-2 back to the Garden and the Cavs don't have LeBron in it, at like at least 70%. Horford's playing great basketball. Bradley's playing great basketball. Marcus Smart looked great last night. LeBron at less than 70%, the Celtics can run with that team. The Celtics have a fighting chance.
Yeah, I think that the Celtics, yeah, they definitely played. They showed that they could play with the Cavs last night, especially being away from the Garden, where many people would think that the home advantage would in fact help the Celtics. Maybe it's come back to haunt them. I'm not really sure about that, but it was cool to see the Celtics beat the Cavs in what they call like the homeland, the land or whatever.
Right, defend the land.
Defend the land. And I don't, something's in the water, I guess. Avery Bradley had that.
Red tipped it in to Paul Pierce. Red tipped it in. But yeah, you know what? And you can look at it like this. Take the two best players off each team. Take Isaiah off the Celtics, take LeBron off the Cavs. That's essentially what we saw last night. And yeah, Kyrie's probably a little bit better than Avery Bradley. And Kevin Love's probably a little bit better than Al Horford to look at the next two down the list. But then you get into the supporting cast, and I'll take Jay Crowder over Kyle Korver every day of the week. I think Jonas Jerebko's an underrated player. I'm not trying to sound like too much of a green teamer. Marcus Smart is certainly better than Shumpert. If you take the difference between the Cavs and everybody else is LeBron. He's the best player in the world, and that's all that matters in the NBA. But when you take him off that team, I mean, they're the same as anybody else in the East. They're one piece away when you take LeBron off that team, and that's what they were last night. They were even to the Celtics because LeBron, factored in, what was he, 1-for-8 from the field, 11 points. He was a non-factor last night. That was the Cavs without LeBron James.
And it was just amazing to sort of see it happen. He was just coasting, as you were saying. Like he was the old LeBron James. He regressed back to that form sort of in this game.
He quit last night.
When they got this lead, he just decided like, oh, the Cavs are going to win. So he doesn't have to play as hard as he has to. And he looked at his stats. He was 0-for-4 from the three. And yeah, 4-for-13 from shooting. And seeing LeBron, like, it's not what you'd expect to see is the superstar, the best player in the game today, doing in the Eastern Conference Finals. But it happened, and the Celtics took advantage of it, and they were able to pounce on them and somehow snuck out with a win from this game, and barely, as Avery Bradley hit that three towards the end. But I have one thing to say about some of the Cavaliers players.
Yep.
Tristan Thompson.
Yep.
He kept getting to the line, and he kept getting...
No, he got to the line more than the Celtics did as a team.
Celtics, which is unbelievable. Exactly, yeah.
But I think what the Celtics did when you put your Rebko in is, and they've done this at times this year, you say, you know what, we're not going to worry about rebounding. Mm-hmm. We're going to try to outrun you. And Tristan Thompson should be doing that. But you're right, he was a factor last night.
And somehow he was able to get 12 out of 15 shots from the free throw line, which is incredible because during the season he was sort of half as good. He was shooting 50%. And yeah, going back to Jonas Jerebko, he had a fantastic game towards the end, sort of a savior for the Celtics, the Swedish Larry Bird, as they call him.
You know what? And if that's the Celtics game plan going forward, I was calling for it this week on Twitter. Make LeBron shoot. Don't let him go to the basket. And that's what they did. They closed off the lane. They fouled Tristan Thompson in close, and they forced LeBron to take jump shots. And that always has been the little issue with his game. He is a very good jump shooter. I believe he was shooting going into this series over 60% from beyond the arc in the playoffs. So something absurd. But his jump shot has always been a little come and go compared to the rest of his game. He's still going to be a good shooter, but there are nights where he is human from the field, from outside of the paint, especially from three. And I think the Celtics last night and need to, going forward, take advantage of that and make him shoot from the outside. Don't let him drive to the basket and don't give Tristan Thompson free layups inside. Force him, force Kevin Love. If they're going to beat you from three, awesome, great. Make them do it. Because if you're going to let them get inside and get and ones and let LeBron control the paint, no, you're gonna lose by 60 again. Exactly. So protect the paint. As much as it pains me to say, Amir Johnson's probably going to be a big player if the Celtics want to win this down stretch, solely because that six fouls you have to give on Tristan Thompson that aren't going to other players who can contribute elsewhere on the floor. Yes. Maybe even Jordan. Look, they're going to need bodies to pick up fouls in this series. Mm-hmm. And then guard the perimeter. Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart should be playing 40 minutes a night.
Yep.
Because Avery Bradley's the best perimeter defender in the NBA. And best defensive guard in the NBA. He's not as good of a perimeter defender as Kawhi, but best defensive guard in the NBA. Marcus Smart's ferocious, and look, he's streaky, which is good and bad, but he's on right now. Mm-hmm. So ride it. And give Jaylen Brown some chances. But you're going to win the series defensively. You're going to win the series by forcing the Cavs to the outside. Granted, are they going to win this series at all? Probably not. I don't want it to sound like I'm picking the Celtics. I said Cavs in six at the beginning. I'm sticking with that. I think the Celtics will get one more simply because, look, it's new tape for the Cavs. They haven't seen a Celtics team that looks like this. They need to figure it out. That was a part of it last night, was just unfamiliarity. The Cavaliers with the Celtics system sans Isaiah Thomas. But it's there now. Look, it's there. You've beat them once. You know you can do it. Is it, you know, the Nets didn't lose every game this year, and they were horrible. Mm-hmm. Is it that? Is it the Brooklyn Nets finding a game? Is it the start of something bigger? We will have to wait and see, and we will figure out. Actually, we will talk about whatever the answer is next week. I want to thank Matt McCarthy for calling in earlier, talking Red Sox. Mitch, welcome to the program. Welcome to the office, and I'm sure we'll be hearing from you again throughout the summer. Mitch, by the way, goes to you, Matt. So I'll let you shout out the alma mater there.
Go Minutemen.
Go Minute. Oh, God. I feel bad for your rooting interests, especially come football season.
We've had our struggles.
Anyways, thank Matt McCarthy earlier. Mitch, you can follow us on Twitter at the Calling It Podcast. Subscribe on iTunes and SoundCloud next week. We'll probably know who's in the NBA Finals, Stanley Cup Finals as well. We will check in on that. Until then, I am Alex Barth. Thanks for listening. I will talk to you next week.
You've been listening to Calling It with Alex Barth. This episode has been brought to you by Snapcall Sports. Snapcall, the game within the game. Available for iPhone or Android.